For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
To get by Benning. Darnell Nurse left it in the corner. Gets up center. Perry! Scoops! Corey Perry!
Well, you're able to shake away from Solani. It's given away to Solani. Around in front. Score! Teemu Selanne with the steal.
Three in the face. One. Score! Off the floor! On the floor! Paul Kariya!
I was waiting to see if you were going to say something. It's like a waiting game now. I never know. So I know.
I know. I'm sorry.
Waited for the transition. It didn't happen. But, yeah, we're back. Almost a month later. We expected more to happen, or at least I expected more to happen, after a crazy couple first days of free agency for the Ducks. And I didn't expect, like, you know, a ton more, but our last show we talked about DeBrincat potentially coming to Anaheim, Gibson getting traded out of Anaheim, Henry getting traded out of Anaheim, signing more free agents, and nothing happened. And dude, we talked about Terry and Zegras and their contracts and what that would look like, and they're still unsigned. And I guess what the only thing we've seen is Lucas Dostal got his deal. Noah Warren, Leo Carlson signed entry-level contracts. Who was the other RFA? Because Drysdale's still unsigned. There was a fifth one. Why can't I remember who it is?
Is it Gruel?
Yeah, Bo Gruel. So Bo Gruel and Lucas Dostal got their deals. I figured that was going to happen at some point. Dostal's is kind of a little bit of a bridge in a sense, a 2-year deal. First year is 2-way, second year is 1-way. So again, it doesn't really mean much, just how he gets paid, but you get the thought process there that if they do have to send him back down, it's not hurting them against the cap this year, which, again, they have enough cap to make it work. But a good structure for him, and then we're still waiting on Drysdale and Terry and Zegras, which we're going to get into on this show. And then from there, man, I think we're just going to shoot the shit with the NHL, see what's going on. Some decent signings. Tarasenko to Ottawa the other day, 1 year, $5 million. Mm-hmm. And a few other decent acquisitions. Obviously, DeBrincat, we'll talk about that. He ended up going to Detroit. And, man, it's been slow days, though, which I guess you can expect heading in from, you know, last couple weeks of July heading into August.
Yeah, no, it's officially the dead time. There's not a lot going on right now. I mean, you know, BR is tweeting out, what do we think of AI-generated NHL logos? And people are ranking the most overrated players in the NHL, and it's just all crap. I mean, shit, I did a roster game for no real reason. Like, we're just goofing off, man. It's kind of, we're all supposed to go see our families, but whatever. It's overrated.
Yeah, and you, me and Brett have just been spending our mornings doing Pukdoku for the last month.
Yeah. Yeah, didn't realize. So, just before, I guess, is it weird to you that there's not a Finnish player on the Ducks right now? Because I was thinking about that a couple, I think, I don't know, like a week ago or something like that. But there was one of, like, Finnish, like, one of the sections was Finnish players. And I was thinking about it. There hasn't been a Finnish player on the Ducks in a while. And like,
is it Vatanen who did the last one?
I think Vatanen was, or maybe Hakanpää.
Hakanpää.
Might have been the last one. But that was, like,
good couple years ago.
Bummer.
Yeah.
Like, there were Finns on this team for a long time.
Well, it was like one of the categories a couple days ago was Swedish players, and the Hurricanes were there. And they have every Finn possible right now. Like, they've got four or five on the team. And I was trying to think of Swedish players to play for the Hurricanes. I couldn't think of it. It's been a while.
Yeah, I mean, again, like, because Teräväinen is Finnish, right?
Yeah, Teräväinen, Aho. Now I can't remember the rest of the guys, of course, but
Kotkaniemi probably.
Yeah, Kotkaniemi. Yeah, so there's a good bunch of them. But we're gonna do today's on the show, some riveting content there, just to to extend the show a little bit. It's a lot of fun. We've been having fun with the last couple of days, and I think it's one of those things that's kind of blown up on Hockey X now, not Hockey Twitter.
Yeah, Hockey X.
Hockey X.
It sounds so stupid when you say Hockey Act.
Yeah, you got a bit of
Hockey
fun
Act
with that.
Sounds like a fake league in a movie.
Yeah, they got me with that because I was looking through like apps and what apps were running in the background on my phone just conveniently when they switched it over, like right when they switched it over, because I was looking like at the time it was like the last hour of activity because my phone was like on fire, didn't drain a lot of battery. So I was going and looking at it, and it was like, okay, using Twitter, and then X is running in the background all of a sudden. So I was like, what the hell is this? I deleted it, and then I wasn't getting, I was talking to you at the time, wasn't getting any notifications or messages. So I tried to go back and load Twitter, and it didn't exist. Then I realized that they switched it over. They switched it out. And the sad thing is, like, I had like passively heard about it, I don't know, like on TikTok or something, how Elon Musk was trying to change it to X, but Zuckerberg like owned the rights to the letter X or something, and naming rights or something through Meta. I don't know. So that's how I'd heard about it, but I never looked into it. I didn't. I just figured it wasn't gonna happen, or it was just another stupid thing between Zuckerberg and Musk to build up this eventual UFC fight that they're supposed to have.
Yeah, that's it.
So I didn't think about it, and then completely slipped my mind, and I looked like a boomer when when all that
I love
happened.
It, man. So good.
It's great.
Is there like a less potential exciting fight than those two? Because I'm trying to think of like two people I would be that, like, in theory, you would be more excited to see fight, but in actuality, you know it would be absolutely nothing.
Yeah. I don't know. Apparently, everything I've seen on these guys is they're, like, randomly, and it's, like, hyped because up. It's hyped up. They're not even randomly good fighters. They're just, like, not overweight guys, you know what I mean, who have a lot of money, so they have personal trainers, and they work out and whatever, but
yeah,
when it actually,
free time,
yeah, when it actually
all that
happens,
like Zuckerberg
fight,
does, like,
be like,
I don't know, like kickboxing or some bullshit, but it's like,
yeah, it's like anybody
he just
who
does it
cause watched. If you watch regular boxing, I didn't, but if you watch regular boxing and then you went and watched like the YouTube boxing or whatever, right? Like that's got to be the same argument there, right? Is like, oh yeah, in theory, to see these two guys that everybody knows fight would be great. Until you actually have to watch the fight, and it sucks.
you know who wins that fight?
Who?
Is Tom from MySpace.
Yeah.
Who is just chilling. Just sold MySpace, made a ton of fucking money, and has completely fallen off the face of the earth. Like, one of the very few people to be rich correctly. Just disappear.
Yep.
Just everybody else, when they get rich, they ruin it by opening their mouths and trying to be like famous or whatever. This dude just disappeared.
What if it just turned into like a Royal Rumble WWE match and like Bill Gates comes out and just all the tech guys start coming out? Steve Jobs just appears. He's been hiding, waiting for this fight this entire time.
Oh my god, that's right. You get Steve,
it's like
Ballmer.
The Undertaker returns, Steve Jobs.
Exactly. Oh my god.
He never really died. He was waiting for this moment to come back. So.
Oh my god, dude. That would be so... See, this is why we need to bring back Celebrity Deathmatch. That show rocked. That's the only place where a Zuckerberg-Musk fight would be interesting.
Yeah. That's the thing is like I would watch it out of curiosity, but I wouldn't pay pay-per-view money for it. And you know that's exactly what's going to happen with it, right? So
no, you would watch it the next day on YouTube,
yeah,
just to see what happened.
Yeah.
So anyway, it's stupid, but whatever. Rich people are weird.
They're both aliens anyway, so
yeah, no shit.
All right.
Not a human emotion between the two of them.
No, not at all. All right, you want to get into this this puck doku?
All right, let's do it. You want to bring it up? Or you want me to bring it up?
I've got it up, and then you might as well bring it up too. And I've got it on the screen, and it hopefully
okay
doesn't lag the entire show, but we'll see.
Okay.
Do you know when you got it up? We'll go.
I got it. Let's go.
Where are we starting?
I think. Well, okay. I mean, look.
Well, we're doing this things together because I've got it up on here.
I want to start in the top left.
Okay.
So wait, let's do it this way. Across the top today.
Yeah.
So everybody knows is Vegas Golden Knights, the New York Rangers, 40 goals single season. Down the left is Penguins, Vancouver Canucks, and 40 assists in a single season. Mm-hmm. So I think the first place to start would be who is the most random player to go for 40 and 40 in a single season?
Random player.
Like, who...
Do you think there'd be, like, a lot of Tage Thompson guesses? Because it just happened, yes. Probably?
Yes. Yes, I do. Let's see. Who...
Like, the obvious ones come to mind of guys who hit 40 and then had, like, 100 points, right? Like, that's the problem.
Right.
You gotta think of, like, a guy who...
Like, Perry hit, like, 90 points, I think, in his Hart season?
Yeah, but he had 50 goals, so... I'd be worried right that he was, like... 39 assists or something. I don't think it was that bad, though.
But he only had 50 goals. He didn't have 51.
Yeah.
So he hit 90 points, but I don't want to look it up, so okay.
We could go with
that. Do you have one you want to jump to?
I'm trying to think of like obscure guys. Like, there's been a few random guys who've hit like close to 40 or 39 recently, and I just, they're I'm trying to remember who they are of those guys. Like, I know DeBrincat's probably on there with a 40-40, but...
Is he? Maybe. I don't know, man.
Maybe not. He had a 40 and a 40... He didn't hit 50, so he was under... He only had 40. And I think he had like an 80 or 90 point season, so that would put him close.
Mm-hmm. But like, who... Yeah.
I don't know. I'm leaning Perry. I'm leaning Perry, too, because I feel like it would be a low guess.
That's what I think. All right, I'm good to go in Perry.
All right, let's see.
Let's go for it.
Oh, yes. 0.3%.
Yes.
We're on the board.
All right, baby.
We're on the board.
All right, where do you want to go next?
Okay, let's finish off the 40-plus goals. So we'll do 40 goals, 40-plus goals for the Penguins and 40-plus goals for the Canucks. We have some obvious ones. Obviously, Pettersson's hit it. JT Miller's hit it. Pavel Bure's hit it. But I'm trying to think, like...
One of the Sedins has hit it.
Daniel's definitely hit it. Henrik never hit it. There's no way Henrik hit it. So those are some of the obvious ones.
Let's see. Who else would have hit 40 goals?
Kessler would never have hit it. He would maybe 30.
Kessler, no.
Did Burrows hit 40? No. But he played with the Sedins. That's what I'm wondering.
But if he ever cracked 60 points, I'd be amazed.
Mm-hmm. I just think if he ever had, like, one just amazing season, he did it, but no.
Are we sure Kessler never hit 40 in the year he won Selke?
I can't. I in that era, I just...
There's no fucking way. There's no way.
There's no way. You know, how many goals did Kuzmenko get this year? He got 40, right? I think he did I think he would have been a really good guess to 40-40. I'm pretty sure he had a 40-40 this year. Even though Perry got us at 0.3, which is as good as you can.
You think Kuzmenko hit 40 goals this year?
He had like 70 or 80 points. And I can't remember if he had 39 goals or just above 40. He's right around that. So
if you want to take the guess, I'm down for it. I say go for it, but
that's a stretch. I don't know.
All right, let's sit on that one. Yeah. Let's move to a different. Let's move to the Penguins.
Well, so you've got Malkin,
Crosby, Gensel. Lemieux.
Gensel's hit it, I think.
Mm-hmm. Kunitz never hit 40, right?
I can't see Kunitz hitting. Did Russ hit 40?
No way.
Yeah, I don't know.
If he hit 30, that would be good. Like, if he hit 35.
Then, yeah, before
Oates never played for them.
No.
But they had Ron Francis. Did Ron Francis hit 40 goals?
Probably
for
hit 40 too.
Oh yeah, multiple times.
Like, of the five, Gensel's probably the least guessed
answer. Mm, yeah, that's probably true.
But it's likely going to be up there, around like probably 15-20%.
At least, yeah. I mean, I'm good with it if you want to go against him.
How do you spell this?
G-U-E-N-T-Z-E-L.
Jake Gensel. 9%. All right, we're good.
We'll take it.
So there's four other pretty solid names in front of you. All right. Let's finish off the 40-plus. We'll go 40-plus assists now. So
okay.
We got Rangers with 40-plus assists, which gives us a little bit of a deeper cut, and then Vegas Golden Knights with 40-plus assists.
You know who we should do for the 40-plus assists for the Rangers is Leach.
Leach? Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's do it. Brian Leach. 17%. It's not too bad.
That's higher than I would have expected.
Yeah. Some people are thinking way back. I mean, you would have thought, like, Mess would have been there. Panarin.
Mm-hmm.
Zibanejad, probably.
Zibanejad, yeah. Did St. Louis hit 40 when he was there?
I don't know. He had a couple of good years. Gabrick, probably not in the assist side of things when he was there.
Mm-mm. And then 40-plus assists for
Vegas. Did Carlson have 40 in the 40-goal season, or no? Marchessault might have had 40 assists.
Man, Marchessault might have.
I don't know if Eichel did. I feel like this list is like there's like maybe three or four guys.
Look at it, maybe
did Shea Theodore have 40 assists, you think?
I'll bet you Shea Theodore is hit
40 assists. I don't know, man. I feel like that's a tight one. Because then you'd be thinking he had close to a 50-point season, if not over. Did he do that?
I think he did, didn't he? Like, because he was getting serious Norris votes one year.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least Norris consideration.
No other defenseman for Vegas would have done it, though, because I don't think Pietrangelo did it. So if there was anybody who did it, it would have been Theodore. And then for forwards, it's Stone, maybe Eichel, maybe Marchessault, Carlson. That's it, right?
Maybe. No, like Riley Smith, maybe?
So,
but I don't think Riley Smith has hit 60
points. I'm saying either Marchessault or Theodore.
I'd say Marchessault. That feels more likely to me.
Probably safer. Jonathan Marchessault. 35%.
Okay.
I want to do a quick check here. On Shea Theodore now.
Wait a minute. No. Here, let me put it in on mine.
Put it in yours, yeah. See if we escape one there.
Yeah. Incorrect.
Ooh. How close was he? Done. I wonder how close he was.
Let me look it up real quick.
He had to be in the 30s.
Hockey Reference. Theo. Okay, Theo.
Oh, wow. Yeah. 38. The 21-22 season, he had 52 points, 38 assists. We lucked out there for sure. Chandler Stevenson would have been a good one.
Here's a fun thing. Hockey Reference also has hockey now for their Immaculate Grid. So we can do both.
Nice. So Stone would have been a good answer. Pietrangelo did hit 40 assists this year. Chandler Stevenson did twice. I wasn't even thinking of Chandler Stevenson, to be honest with you. Mark Stone did. David Perron. Didn't think about that one.
Marchessault
did once. Riley Smith got 38. None for Carlson, though. So it was Marchessault, Stone, Pietrangelo, Perron, pretty much. That was it. No Eichel either, so.
Eichel only had one more point than Zegras did this year.
Yeah, and he's, you know.
Which is insane.
About a 30-30 type season, 35-35 season.
Yeah. All right, what's next, champ?
All right, we're into the two-team ones now. So let's start with the Vegas ones. Because there's less players to go through here. So we got.
You know where I want to go for Vegas, Pittsburgh.
Pierre. Wait, no. Who?
It's my guy, Reva.
Oh, Reeves? I forgot he played for Pittsburgh.
Everybody forgets about him because they hate him, but I love him. He's perfect.
Ryan Reeves, 7%.
That sounds right.
7% of people remember him.
Okay, and then
Vancouver, and who did they get from
Vancouver in the draft? I'm trying to remember.
I think theirs was one of the no-name guys.
That's not where they got Derek Englund from, is it? Mm-hmm.
I don't think so.
No, they would have gotten him from Calgary, probably.
Yeah, I think so.
Oof.
Wasn't any of the goalies.
No. I'm
trying to think, like, early days, Golden Knights. Like,
Stoner never played. Did you know Stoner never played a game for Vegas?
Stoner never did?
Never played a single game for Vegas. He got taken in the expansion draft, and his career was over.
I thought, was he not injury prone or something at the time too?
I don't remember. I thought he played that first season for them, but he never played a single game.
I think the guy who came from Vancouver must have been like a complete no name or something, man. Like, there was a fair amount of those guys, so we're having to try and think of like guys who are playing for them now.
This is riveting.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, when we get the hard ones, it's great, right?
Yeah. Okay. So wait a minute. Here we go. Got.
Trying to write it down here.
Who would have played for fucking Vancouver?
There can't be many.
You know what? I'm gonna cheat and I'm gonna put Derek Englund in here.
You're gonna put Derek Englund?
Incorrect. So that's fine. We were right that it wasn't him.
Okay. Well, there's our freebie. Like, the thing is, like, the team hasn't changed too much. So like, whoever it is, it's got to be some.
Well, what's crazy is they only had a couple of guys from the original team on this year's team.
Yeah. Like, I'm thinking of the goalies, Leonard Thompson, Fleury, some of those guys. Trying to see if he had like kind of like a random goalie. We talked about Carlson, Marchessault, Theodore, Stone, Pacioretty, Eichel. None of those guys play. Nick Waugh wasn't.
Who was on that fucking defense that first year? It was England.
Kings. A lot of them are drafted. We might have to come back to this one, I think.
All right, let's come back to
Nate Schmidt was Winnipeg, right? Where did he play in? Can't look him up, but I don't know if he...
No, Colin Miller. Colin Miller. He played for all three of them.
He played for Vancouver?
Yeah.
Colin Miller? Okay.
Colin Miller. I'm almost 100% positive.
We're going Colin Miller. Incorrect. Oh, no.
So then you're right. It was Nate Schmidt.
Is it Nate Schmidt? It is Nate Schmidt, yeah. We'll get Schmidt in there.
I got Schmidt in there.
42%, man. There can't be many other guys.
No way.
There can't. All right. So we have one category we're not going to get here. We know a 40-goal guy for Vancouver, so we'll save that.
Okay.
We know we're going to get one there. So what one we're more confident here with Pittsburgh and the Rangers and Vancouver and the Rangers?
I'll take Hagelin for Pittsburgh Rangers.
Yeah, that's a good one.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Carl Hagelin, 13%.
Nice.
See if we can think of a Vancouver Rangers player.
Did Emerson Edom ever play for the Rangers?
Michael Grabner, right? He played.
Yeah. That's gotta absolutely be one. Did.
You know what? Is Michael Grabner a 40-goal scorer for the Vancouver Canucks?
No, absolutely fucking not.
Nice. Grabner was 0.4%.
Incorrect. as a 40 goal scorer. So no.
All right. Well, we were Nate Schmidt away from a.
God, son of a.
Colin Miller away from a, an immaculate grid. Or nine out of nine. Corey Perry was our best answer, 0.3%. Would you look at that?
Yeah, that's right.
Corey Perry, then Michael Grabner, then Ryan Reeves, Jake Guentzel. Somehow, Jake Guentzel was only 9%. Carl Hagelin was 13%. So a lot of people remember Carl Hagelin in his days with the Rangers and the Penguins. A lot of Nate Schmidt fans, a lot of Brian Leetch fans, but not bad. Not bad.
Take it. What was our final score?
Our final score.
Well, like what? 270?
I don't know why I can't see it now. Oh, there, open summary. 223.
Oh, sweet. We rock.
So not bad. Pretty good. Did good. All right. All right.
We'll take it.
Yeah. 20 minutes down. Killing time.
Oh, here we go. So, according to Twitter, we got a couple. From the Rebuilding blog. First time caller, long time listener. I have more of a comment than a question. Sometimes I think about Stanislav Čistov.
Sometimes we all think of Stanislav Čistov. It's okay. The what if.
Among us.
You know what I think about a lot?
What do you think about a lot, Edward?
Sidney Crosby in a Ducks jersey instead of Bobby Ryan.
You know what hurts more than Sidney Crosby?
What?
In a Ducks jersey? Anze Kopitar.
Yeah. I mean, then, yeah, you can open the rabbit
hole
there.
That's the one for me. And that's what we should do is look at all these fucking J-Fresh redrafts.
Yeah. You sure you want to?
What do you expect from Noah Warren this season, and what is this prospect upside? Same question, but also with Jack Perbix, please, from Brian Lind.
Jack Perbix, my God. Well, Noah Warren, I expect him. He got traded. I think it was Victoriaville he got traded to, so let me... double check that.
No, Warren's still in.
No.
Still with Kadna.
No. He got traded in the summer. I swear to God, he got traded.
Then why would Kadna tweet out that they're excited about him going to junior camp?
Let me check. Yep, he's listed for Victoriaville next year. Maybe because he was a player of theirs.
No, right? Fair enough, I guess.
So he got traded at the QMJHL draft for draft picks. So he's going to play for Victoriaville, and I imagine that's where he goes back this year. So I can't see him making the team with all the other players who are going to be in San Diego. When you look at Minchikov will be there, Zellweger will be there, Leno will be back in juniors, but a lot of options that the Ducks can go with in front of him. Hellison, obviously, Lacombe will all be there. So he'll be back in junior, which I think is the best spot for him. He needs some more refining for the rest of his game defensively. Obviously, you know, the size is there, and defensively he is good, and he's a good skater, but just he just needs a bit more time. He's a project. It's going to take longer. And Jack Perbix, I think he's past his signing period anyway at this point with the Ducks. I'm sure they still own his rights, but he just, for me, is not a guy that I think is going to make it to the NHL level. You know, when we're covering their team, it was more about Blake McLaughlin and Jackson Lacombe than anything. Mm-hmm. Jack Perbix was kind of the fourth line energy forward, and he's left U of Minnesota now, and he's gone to Western Michigan, where I think he played a bit more of an elevated role this year. The point total showed that, but even then, 19 points in 39 games, 6 goals. He's, what, 22, will be 23 by the start of the season. Maybe the Ducks sign him as an AHL forward. At that point, I can't see anything beyond that for the rest of his career, you know, whether it be...
Yeah, I mean, I think that's kind of what it is. I mean, he's certainly someone who could bounce around the AHL and earn himself a call-up with injuries and, you know, hard work as, like, a fourth liner, but I don't know that there's too much more upside than that.
No. Friend of the show, we had a great interview with him and Blake McLaughlin back when they got drafted, and that one was a lot of fun. So if you want to know a bit more about them, you can dive back into that interview. But beyond that, I don't foresee.
Yeah, I mean, if he's Sam Carrick, he's going to be an incredibly happy guy.
Yeah. Yeah, if he
which and, great for him.
You know, a guy who can play a handful of NHL games and bounce back and between the levels between AHL and NHL, that would be excellent for him if that was something that ends up coming out of it. But Mm-hmm. At this point, there's nothing to indicate that's the case. And you have to see his transition to the pro level and how that goes before anything. Sometimes these guys surprise you. They come out of college and things just click at that level and they become that tweener type player. But until we see that, until we see him, whether it's with San Diego or another team, I can't imagine any NHL games are in his future anytime soon.
Yeah, no. Which is unfortunate, but, you know, yeah. It's small league, hard league to get into. Yeah. Maybe he can go play. I don't mean this, you know, condescendingly, but, like, maybe he can go play across seas and or overseas or whatever and you know, make a nice career for himself. There's a lot more hockey leagues than just the four in the North America, so.
Yeah, did a lot more than, I mean, four? The majority of
AHL,
people.
AHL, right, so. ECHL.
Three?
Is the ECHL? No, there's only.
It's affiliated.
Well, there's the USHL, right?
Yeah, but that's junior.
Okay, that's right.
So it's just three.
Whatever.
And the ECHL is, like, loosely associated, I feel like. You know what I mean?
Like, that's where, like, the Solar Bears are, right?
Yeah,
Orlando?
Yeah. Some teams have affiliates, and I feel like some teams
don't.
Yeah, we
do. The Ducks have an affiliate.
Or, for, like, there are some seasons where some teams don't have ECHL affiliates.
Yeah.
And, like, rarely are transactions made between the two teams. It's just, like, it was on an emergency basis. Like, if there's too many players up at the AHL level, then guys not playing, they want them to play more. Like, I think Ole Eriksson got sent down there a couple times. I think Gage Alexander also played down there. So, again, it's like you want a guy, you have four goaltenders on the roster at the AHL level. You want a guy to get some game time, then you send him down there. Either he becomes the starter or splits games down there. I think the same goes for forward depth and defense depth, and it rarely happens. You try and manage the roster ahead of the season, but if guys end up coming up or making the team that you didn't expect, then a lot of times you get forced into that situation, but it doesn't happen often.
So, like we said, no Warren signed his ELC. What, I mean, we've talked about it a little bit, but I guess just, like, what is, I mean, his upside is Clayton Stoner, Brian Allen, that type of player, just a little bit more effective.
Maybe, like, I mean, maybe it's like a guy we just signed, an Radko Gudas type player. Now, I mean, obviously Warren is significantly bigger than Radko Gudas.
Yeah,
but just
probably a better way to look at
it. Yeah, like a physical shutdown defenseman, but in, like, the modern sense, where he he's a good skater for his size. He has enough offensive instincts to make a good first pass. He's got a good shot. He's never going to be more than a 20-point defenseman in a very good season, and that's not what you expect out of him. But he's got, like, at least average tools in different areas, and then he uses his size well, and defensively he's just really good. So I kind of see him in that sense. And, you know, Eric Johnson with Colorado, right? Like, in that type of role. I'm trying to think of other guys who were in that role, but just...
In, like, the nth percentile outcome, he's Sheldon Soré, right?
Yeah.
Where it's just a big, heavy shot and a mean defenseman.
Yeah. Yeah. And doesn't make a ton of mistakes. Like, he's not a detriment offensively out there. He's just not going to do Olin Zellweger, Jamie Drysdale, you know, Cam Fowler type things, right? So.
Yeah, exactly.
Didn't want to make any comment about me throwing Cam Fowler in there?
No, Cam Fowler's a perfectly fine little pair defenseman. I don't know, man.
Some people double taking at Cam Fowler getting.
Cam Fowler's a perfectly fine little pair defenseman, and I'm very happy for him and his wonderful career that he's had. You know what? Actually, okay, so you baited me, and now I'm going to take it. I did think about it today because Inside the Rink tweeted out that the Ducks have three numbers retired. Who's next? And obviously, the next is Getzlaf.
Yeah.
And then you get into the question of, do they do anybody before Perry retires? Because then it's Perry.
Yeah.
And this is something we've done a podcast about, like, I think two summers ago or whatever. We talked about the Ring of Honor and how it would be very important for Anaheim, in my opinion, and, you know, we talked about this, you kind of agree with me, is that putting a Ring of Honor in Anaheim, I think, could be really, really big. Because there's a lot of players who mean a lot to the franchise who simply don't reach the retire their jersey.
Together, Ruchin, right,
Pronger.
Yeah. So.
Yeah. I mean, I think Soleil goes in that group. Mm-hmm. Kessler ultimately belongs in that group. Cogliano probably belongs in that group.
Yeah.
Just guys who are big parts of the team and you know. But I was thinking about it and, like, do they retire number four?
I think it depends.
Because
he's
going to have every single defensive record by the time he's done, if he doesn't already.
I think you have to. The only thing that
Do you have to? Do you have to?
Yeah, maybe not. I just think like everything that he's, it doesn't have the same vibrato of like the guys who are already up there and the guys who will be up there. The Solani, Kariya, Niedermayer, Getzlaff, and Perry. Fowler, as great as he is, and as you know, if he spends his entire career here, over 1,000 games in Anaheim, he could lead the games played. He could be Getzlaff out for that. Right? Like it could be all defensive totals. I think he's already the leader or close to it anyway. So you know, statistically, yeah, but there's just not the same wow factor behind his name and putting it in like, yeah, he's a rafters type player, other than that he just spent his entire career here, right? Because there's a lot of guys who do that. He's a good player, spends his, they spend their entire career with a team, so statistically they have the numbers to say they should, you know, they lead a lot of categories, they're either, you know, number one or number two in a lot of those, but is he rafters quality? I think Cam Fowler, you put a debate up there, and it all depends on how you view you know, retiring numbers and what you classify needing to be done to get your name up in the rafters. And for me, I think he falls short of that, despite, you know, again, already leading and adding to those numbers by the end of his career, even if he stays his entire career in Anaheim. I just, I can't see it. If those are the five names that are up there and the only five names that are up there.
Right.
Yeah. Again, unless he becomes the next captain, the Ducks win a Stanley Cup and whatever, then like you add a little bit more to that resume before he retires, then maybe. But as things stand right now, I find it a bit tough to include him in that same category.
He is fourth right now in games played at 893, which is over 200 clear of fifth place, who is Silverberg. He doesn't make the top 10 in goals, but he is fifth in assists by almost 50 over Ruchin. He's sixth in points by about 80 points. And let's see, goals created, he's sixth, but that's not a real stat. Let's see where he's in plus minus. Doesn't show up in plus minus, doesn't show up in penalty minutes, doesn't show up in power play, in even strength goals. He's tied for seventh in power play goals with Bobby Ryan. And he's eighth in game winning goals.
You would assume in all the categories he's close.
It's a legitimately interesting. Yeah, he's right in the. I mean,
he'll be top five, and if not already, in all of those by the end of his career, if he stays even a couple more seasons in Anaheim, right?
So he's at So he's got 91 goals right now, and Cogliano has 102 for 10th, which means by the end of the, assuming he plays out the rest of his contract in Anaheim, he will move into the top 10 in goals. Adam Henrique is already ninth, which is not great.
That's wild.
Ricard Raquel is fifth in goals all time for Anaheim. Jesus,
Lord. It's something, again, I mean, the fact that Fowler is in the top 10 as a defenseman, it shows the longevity he's had here. Yeah, it becomes, it's an argument right now. If everything stays
it's
the same.
It's an interesting conversation. And it's a very interesting conversation. I mean, because again, like, I don't think you can separate the fact that he played right out of the draft, right? He came in at 18 years old. He played right away. He's been a staple on the blue line for 13 years now. Like, he is, regardless of your feelings on retiring, he is a club legend, right? Like, in some sense, right? Yeah. He is a very important part of this club's history and that kind of stuff. I do think Eric Stevens made this point earlier during last season, talking about Cam, and I think it's very fair, which is that his career is overshadowed a little bit by some of the expectations that came with his draft.
Yeah.
And I think that's a perfectly fair way to frame it. You know, it's just a really interesting conversation, and I think it's very hard for me to say his number should be retired, especially if Jaguars isn't.
See, like that's the thing too. Is like
at the same time,
what do you
value? I don't know that I could throw as much of a bitch fit about it as I would maybe want to.
Yeah,
if retired as four.
I feel like that's what we get in with a lot of these arguments of numbers that should be retired or whatever. Is Cam Fowler has one side of the thing where he's got all the statistics, longevity to back it up, right? He'll be top five in most of those categories by the time he retires if he stays in Anaheim or at least just finishes out his contract in Anaheim. Then you have Jaguar. Didn't spend as much time here, but the time he spent here were important years, and he did some amazing things in Anaheim specifically. So then you have that question where it's like, okay, does that warrant and does that merit you getting up there? And they're both lacking on either side of it, which is why there's an argument, right? The five guys who will go up there, and the three that are up there and the two that will go up there, there's no argument on either side, right? They have been important members for this team. They've done, you know, amazing things. They've helped grow the franchise, and they statistically are the best players in franchise history. There's no argument there for either of them. Of the five, maybe, again, the only one you could argue is Scotty, but even then, that's a loose argument. Like, he deserves to be up there. So anybody else, Fowler at the moment, Jaguar, any of the other guys we've mentioned, they're lacking.
He's a big one for me personally.
Yeah, they're just lacking.
But he's a Ring of Honor guy.
Yeah. So then all those guys, again, make sense for Ring of Honor. And I think right now you could say Jaguar and eventually Fowler are like in that fringe category, right? They're teetering on the edge of both. But for me, probably both land on a Ring of Honor type thing. And again, Fowler still has time left, so we all think it's going to be somebody else, a Terry or somebody like that, that becomes the next captain of this team. But if it happens to be Cam Fowler and the Ducks have success under his reign as a captain, that could change, right? Like that does weigh into it at the end of the day. We'll have to see. There's plenty
Derek
of time
Grant,
left.
Just for the record, Derek Grant has more goals than Dustin Penner as a Duck, which is very funny to me. Troy Terry is already 15th.
Yeah, that will be.
He's one goal behind Ryan Kessler.
How many goals is he out of the top 10? Because he could be there by the end of the year or no?
27.
Yeah.
Yeah, Cogliano is at 102. He's at 75.
Yeah, so he'll be there. He'll be top 10 by the end of the year. So
McDonald is 92 and 11. 12 is Cam Fowler at 91.
So is Cam the only active player between Terry and the top 10?
Oh, yep. Yeah, because, I mean, technically, yeah. Because Henrik is in the top 10 and Cogliano is in the top 10 as well.
Yeah.
Yep. Here's a fun one. Trevor Zegras has more than Dustin Penner. Max Comtois is in the top 40 somehow.
We haven't had a lot of
Max,
great goals.
Max Comtois has more goals as a Duck than Chris Pronger or Nick Bonino.
Jeez. That's wild to think.
That's insane. That's absolutely insane. Wow. This is, I'm going to stop looking at this. This is sad.
Yeah, it's
Josh Manson has the same number of goals. Okay, here's a fun list. Max Jones, Isaac Lundestrom, Josh Manson, Pat Maroon, and Ruslan Soleil all have the same number of goals as a Duck. What is the number?
They all have the same amount of goals?
They all have the exact same amount of career goals as a Duck. Jones, Lundestrom, Manson, Maroon, Soleil.
22?
26. Nice job.
Oh,
geez. Yeah. God, this is wild.
Amazing stuff.
This is... Mason McTavish is at 67.
What?
Sam Carrick is at 71.
Points, right?
List of goals.
Oh, okay. I was like, what are you...
George Parros is in the top 100.
Good for him.
Ooh, here we go. Wait, we're going to do this one more time. I'm going to read you names, and you tell me... They all have the same number of goals. Brian Bellows, Emerson Edom, Patrick Kjellberg, George Parros, Carter Rowney, Warren Reichel, Anatoly Semenov, Mike Stillinger, Daniel Sprong, and Ryan Strome. All of those players have the same amount of goals as a Duck.
Strome didn't hit 20 last year, I don't think. So, 17?
15.
Jeez.
Wow. Man, this is wild. Brandon McMillan scored 11 goals as a Duck. Good for him. I didn't realize he had that many.
Good for him, man.
Love to see. Do you even remember him?
Yeah. He was a first round pick.
Yeah.
Did not pan out, though.
Did not.
Anywho, we all remember Stanislav Čistav. Not many of us remember Brandon McMillan, unfortunately. Okay. The big news, the big thing we have to discuss. Terry and Zegras still don't have contracts, and I know a lot of people are getting antsy about that. We had a question, I think, at the beginning of July in our Discord. One of our members in there was panicking about the fact that they're not signed yet, and I was like, all right, it's a little bit too early, and I think that we got asked the question that day, too. It was, okay, when is it time to start stressing about it? I can't remember exactly what I said, but I think I said, if I get to August, then I'll start paying it attention, but I'm not going to stress about it until we're, you know, heading out of August and getting into September and, you know, training camp, preseason, everything's coming up and it's still not signed. So I think we're in that area now. I mean, for Terry, we have to pay attention because the arbitration date is set for Wednesday. So we're going to have some sort of resolution on that next week, or at least some updates on that and how that's going. And hopefully it's avoiding arbitration and getting a contract signed. That'd be best for all sides, but we'll see how that one goes. And obviously a lot more time with Zegras, so I expect that one to come a little bit later down the pipeline, with the focus, I'm guessing, solely on Troy Terry right now, just with that arbitration date coming up.
Yeah, Eric Stevens just put out an article where he said he basically, Paprobeek's refusing to talk about any of it, but all accounts are right now that there is not really any conversation with Zegras, and they are focusing on Troy Terry, which makes sense because the arbitration date, I think you said this, is on Wednesday. Mm-hmm. You know, I'll be very curious because if it reaches arbitration, then we get to find out what everybody's numbers are, and that'll be very interesting. And you know, it's the thing about that is there's an amount of kind of working the ref that goes into asking for the arbitration number, knowing it's going to be somewhere in the middle, and then the Ducks can pick if they want 1 year or 2 years. You know, it's interesting. By all accounts, Troy Terry is a big part of this team's future moving forward. And so I don't know that there's any really thing I don't know that there's really anything to worry about. The question is going to be in what the term Troy Terry is looking for. And with the cap jumping up, or being expected to jump up next year, how does Pat Verbeek want to use the cap going up, right? Because he could, in theory, give him a little bit higher than maybe he's comfortable with the understanding that there's going to be money coming off the books and the cap is going to be going up when there are more guys who need to be signed down the line.
How many more years of control do the Ducks have?
I think one, maybe two.
Yeah, so that I think that plays a part into it too, is that you don't want to sign him to
walk him to UFA.
Yeah, to walk him to UFA sooner rather than later. So I'd be interested to see where both parties are at. As much as I don't want it to go to arbitration, it would be interesting.
I would love to get the numbers.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see where the player is at and what they, and you know, if they're asking for more term or less term on the player side, or if the team wants more term or less term. I've heard a lot of people suggest that, you know, his deal should be somewhat similar if it was a long term deal to Tage Thompson. I think that's fair. This Tage Thompson signed a seven-year, $49 million deal. So what's that, 7x7? So,
yeah, I mean, I don't know. Like, to me, I think it's the Cam Fowler deal. Mm-hmm. I don't know that he has. And again, this isn't necessarily like. This is the part about like contracts that I hate, is because it feels like you're knocking players and stuff, but it's part of the hard cap reality. Is
yeah.
I don't think Troy Terry has enough of a track record at this point to demand a $7 million contract. And I don't think, because Buffalo gave Tage Thompson a $7 million contract that they shouldn't have. Like, they also gave Dylan Cousins a $7 million contract, and I don't think he should be a $7 million player, right? Like, I don't think this is the same as Jack Hughes, where it's like they gave him $8 million and then he turned into one of the 10 best forwards in the league or whatever. Like, Jack Hughes is going to get Hart votes for the next several years. I don't think Dylan Cousins is going to. Tage Thompson might. But I don't, you know, it'll be interesting to see. But, like, to me, for Troy Terry, it's like 6 by 6.5. That's the deal that I think makes the most sense. It makes him a lot of money.
Yeah.
It gets him locked up through, what is he, 25 right now? So that takes him to his early 30s. He'll still be able to get another good contract. And he's going to be making, you know, again, he's going to be making good money. It's not going to prevent this team from being competitive down the line. And, you know, it gets you the opportunity to maybe try to get Zegras closer to 7-ish.
Yeah.
And even then, it's hard to know if you want to do $7 million for Trevor Zegras on term. You know, I was thinking about it the other day, and Braden Point signed a bridge deal, and I don't want to ignore that, because to me, that's closer to what makes sense. And I know there's a lot of talk right now about bridge deals are bad because you always end up overpaying on the next one, but it's kind of not. Like, if you win with them on the bridge deal, the next contract pays for itself.
Yeah.
In revenue and all that kind of stuff. So, like, if they can sign him to, like, a four, like, Trevor Zegras to, like, a 4-year, $5 million deal, $5.5, $6 million, something like that, like, I don't think that's a bad one at all. You know, I don't know that he'll want to do that, but, like, it would still give him plenty of time to make a ton of money and get one last huge contract signed for, you know, 8 years at age, like, 26 or whatever he'll be.
Yeah, I'm sure if you're in a team, that's what you want. Less so on the player side, is that you want 4 years at less. And then, listen, the worst-case scenario is he plays out of his mind and earns a better contract, which means he played well, and you just have to account for that now. And it's 3 years of an extra $2 million over what you would have paid him in the longer term. So you can work with that in a sense, right? If you win in those 4 years with him less and having a bit more cap flexibility is the main thing. I don't know if the Ducks are in the position to do that or not. I think Zegras' contract has a little bit more flexibility in that you could see something like that where Troy Terry, it does seem to be kind of set in terms of at least the value, right? It's just, I think the term is the big thing. Is it going to go to arbitration and the Ducks are going to be stuck into a 1 or a 2 year deal, or are they going to settle on something longer? I don't see Terry landing in like a 3, 4, 5 year contract. I think it is like the 6 or 7, or it's a 1 or a 2 year deal. I just can't see it being middle ground there. Like this, like you mentioned, like a 6 by 6.5 or something like that I can see. 3 or 3, 4 year deals for him don't make sense because he's walking to UFA at that point. Right. So it doesn't really help the Ducks that much, and it really doesn't help the player as much either to walk into free agency at that period of time. So I don't know. I obviously we'll have news on the Terry one sooner rather than later. And like we've said a few times now, like, again, part of me doesn't want it to go to arbitration because I'd like it to get solved ahead of time and both parties, you know, come to a deal with each other and be happy with it. But I really, really selfishly want to see what each side is thinking and what type of deal that they want, what they think the player's worth. So I always love when those come out and you get a – I think one of the ones that came out recently? I can't remember. There's a huge gap. Is the player?
Is it Swayman?
No,
I think Swayman was asking for like 4 or 5 or something.
I'm sure that I haven't seen that one. It might have been last year, but the player wanted like 6.5, and the team was coming in at 3 or something like that. I can't remember exactly what one it was, but you see those every now and then. And I don't think we'll see it with this one, but yeah, that's the downside of that is you see like such a massive gap, and you know that those conversations aren't going to be too fun for the player. You got to hear why the team justifies you are worth $3 million less than you think you're worth.
Right. And that's, you know, that's why, like, you know, soon to no longer be an ESPN personality, Bomani Jones always says, that's the reason you have an agent.
Mm-hmm.
So you don't have to hear your employer bring up all the reasons you're not as good as you think you are.
Yeah.
Because nobody wants to sit there for that, because it is in their best interest to undersell you no matter how good they think you are.
Yep.
Right? There are very few players in this league who are walk in, put a number on a piece of paper, and everyone goes, yes. Those players just don't exist. You know what I mean? And Anaheim certainly doesn't have any of those players right now.
Yeah.
You know, I would say maybe you're looking at Connor Bedard being the next one who you kind of realistically expect to just be able to go, I'm going to go from a 3-year deal to an 8-year deal.
Yeah.
You know, straight into like a $10 million plus contract on an ELC after his ELC or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, and those players just are very rare. Like, it's not fun to sit there and have them be like, yeah, but like, you know, you don't really play defense. And like, you didn't really score as much as we thought. And like, we could have bought guys on your line. And so it's like, nobody wants to hear that. That's not fun. Like,
yeah.
Let your agent do the work. Try to understand, and it's not easy. I'm not saying it's easy, but try to understand and remember that it's a business and they're trying to build a complete roster, and as much as you're going to be a huge part of that, they need to save dollars every little way that they can because it's a hard cap, because the league is stupid. And, you know, I mean, I think if you're a player, you know, the best leverage you have right now is the cap is going up. So you can afford to pay me a little extra right now while maybe we're still outside of our contending window before McTavish's Nick deal, before Minchikov and Zellweger get here, before Carlson gets here, you know, that kind of stuff. So it's going to be interesting. I expect it to be 5 or 6 years. I could see 5 because that gets him to about 30.
Yeah.
You know, but I would love to see him get a 6x6.5 kind of deal. I think that would be perfect for everybody. I think that would adequately pay him for the production he's had and for the type of player that everyone seems to think he can be moving forward. So,
yeah, well, you know, I think that would be the best spot for everybody. I'm fine with 7 years. But it depends on, again, at the money involved at that point. I think his is a bit easier to project than the other two, and throwing Jamie Drysdale in there too, just because of the fact that he was injured all of last year. And like, it's not like Jamie Drysdale is going to get big money. It's just, you know.
What would you give Jamie Drysdale?
I'm thinking like a 2-year bridge deal in a sense, like a, you know, a 2.5, maybe 3 on the high end, for 2 years, and then go from there. You just haven't had enough time to judge it to give him a longer term deal, and I don't think it's fair to the player to be like, we're going to sign you for 5 years at $3 million or $3.5 million when we all know that he's likely going to be a better player than that down the road, or at least projects to still be a better player than that. So I can't see him signing anything longer than 3. I think ultimately it's a 1 or a 2-year deal. I think a 2-year deal is probably better for the team. I imagine like a 2x2.5 or 2x3 or something like that.
Yeah, I think for me, you know, the one that I would always I would lean towards is a 3x3. Mm-hmm. I just give him $3 million, 3 years for $3 million, and just be like, you know, let's just give you basically another ELC's worth of time to get your feet back under you, get healthy, see what you can do, watch you develop, and see what he is. And you know, I guess there's an interesting question, which is like, so Scott Wheeler just did his redraft for, what was that, 2020. Mm-hmm. And he had Jamie falling down to, I think, like 13 or 14.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time. There's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
And I guess the question that I have is, based on kind of what he said and just with the reality of, you know, not everybody's going to be the guy that you hope they're going to be. If he's Matt Grzelcyk, are you happy with that?
Personally, no. And I listen, I understand why he falls in there. I think to say it's not falling because of anything he's done personally. It's or right. Production wise, like he missed an entire season. All things considered, and we talked about this after that rookie season. It was impressive, but it was overshadowed by Trevor Zegras and being in the Calder conversation. Right. Like Jamie Drysdale's season was more than impressive on its own, but it wasn't the focal point that year. There was a lot of opportunity for him to build on that and have a bit more of a solidified role this past season, but he didn't get a chance to do so. So, he falls in that list essentially because other players have been healthy and have progressed and are able to move in front of him there. But I still have hopes that he's more than a Matt Grizzlick. Like, listen, if he's Matt Grizzlick, that means he's an NHL player. He's a top four defenseman. He's still a guy who can get 30, 40 points and isn't a detriment in his own end. That's great. Like that's
fun fact. Matt Grizzlick has never had 30 points.
Really?
Never had 30 points. I honestly, God, I just assumed he had hit 35 a couple points. 26, 24, 20, 21, 18, 15.
Yeah.
Going backwards.
Listen, it's never a bad thing if no matter where you draft a player, you get a guy who's a suitable NHL defenseman that you have no questions about, no concerns about. Like that's the ultimate floor I think you would hope for Jamie Drysdale, is that he can just be that reliable top four defenseman that you can throw out there. But because of where you draft him, and again, you know, the circumstances of him missing time at this point, I think you still hope for a lot more. This season's huge, and we've said that we can say that about everybody, but again, for him missing an entire year, a lot of young defensemen on the way, I think there's going to be that little bit of added pressure of some guys being a bit closer to taking your spot at this point. I think he's going to have a big year. I think he's going to be eager to get back into the fold, and I think we'll quickly put the Matt Grizzlick stuff to bed, hopefully. Yeah. So.
No, for sure.
But yeah, I get where you're coming from. Like, for sure, there you have to start thinking of that as well. You know, what are you happy with if things don't pan out the way they do? Because we just talked about those Cam Fowler as well. Like the lofty expectations for Cam Fowler and what he would become, everybody comparing him to Scotty, that hurts the view on him now because he's been 100% a top four NHL defenseman throughout his entire career. But he doesn't get viewed in it as much as, like, let's say if he was a fifth round pick, we'd all be ecstatic with where he is right now. But because of where he was drafted, you know, you always kind of hold those lost expectations in the back of your head when you're evaluating him. And it's not as much as, well, wow, look what he is. It's, well, look what he is, but we're thinking of what he could have been, right? So Jamie will always be subject to that unless he reaches that potential. And it's the same for Nick Ritchie, and it's the same for all the other guys that either have or haven't hit their potential, right? Where
Jones and Steele and Lundestrom and all of these guys. Yeah. 100% right.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, if Troy Terry was a top 10 pick, are we as ecstatic about him being a 60-point player at this point? Or are we sitting here saying, well, it's great, but we thought he was going to be more, right? Like, that's the dilemma with where you get drafted. Again, like, there are absolutely no concerns with Troy Terry right now because he was a fifth-round pick and he's putting up 60 points and it doesn't happen almost ever. So you're ecstatic about it. But, you know, again, there's nothing wrong with Max Jones. There's really nothing wrong with Sam Steele either. But the fact that they were first-round picks...
Well, let's not get ahead of ourselves. Yeah.
But they can play in the NHL and they've done well where Sam Steele's done well where he's gone to. So it's just if they were later-round picks... You're happy with where their progress is at, where they got to, but it's the fact that they're first-round picks. The same for Isaac Lindstrom. Again, it's the same for every player. So, Jamie Drysdale has a big season in store, and one that's kind of, I guess, defined the look and the feel of him as a player because he missed that entire year. So it's a big one in that sense to really show everybody how much progress he's made, and if he's closer to being, you know, that top two defenseman that some people think he can be, or is he not quite there yet and not at that level?
Right, and I think, you know, when you have players get injured, when they're young, you can always kind of be like, well, they're still young, so it's not, you know, necessarily a huge thing. Obviously, like, when you get hurt when you're young, it's not the same as getting hurt when you're older. Groundbreaking analysis for me. But I think the thing to look at with him that's maybe the most encouraging in a sense is that it was his shoulder.
Yeah.
and it wasn't, you know, his knee or his hip or anything like that that is going to affect what is, you know, his biggest asset, which is his skating. You know, because he's a smart player and he's an incredible skater, and those are the two things that are going to allow him to be a difference maker. You know, and if he's able to rehab his shoulder and put on strength over this period of time when he would be looking to put it on anyways, you know, then that's great. And so that's the part of it, like you were saying, that's very encouraging and should lead to a lot of optimism for what he can do this year.
Yeah.
So.
No.
And there's a lot of, like you said, there's a lot of guys right behind him that are going to be real close, that are going to be guys who are going to be expected to put up offensive numbers and are going to be, you know, looking to push him, even if they don't necessarily play on the right-hand side like he does.
Yeah.
Zellweger and Minchikov are coming, man. And those guys are coming.
Two of them might be on the roster at the start of the year, right? So.
Mm-hmm.
But you miss that full year of development, the guys behind you get a lot closer to taking your spot all of a sudden. So right. I think they'll be good for him. I think it'll be good for him to have a little bit of pressure there. Branko Gudas is you know, again, not a similar player, but one that's going to be in the lineup, right? So now you've got more competition to keep your place, and if other players are playing well and you're not, then it's not a guarantee that you're going to be, you know, either in the lineup or at least that high in the lineup, especially when they're all, you know, all the young guys coming up are offensive defensemen. So Drysdale will start power play one, you would imagine. But if he doesn't play well there, if he's not playing well at all, Zellweger is playing well there or in the AHL with Minchikov, how long of a leash do they give him before they give somebody else a chance? So I think it always helps to have some healthy competition there, and I think it's going to do good for not just Drysdale, but again, the young kids that are going to be competing against him, right? Like, they're going to be wanting to try and earn a spot themselves. So, Zegras, again, the last one here. We've talked about a few times how we'll see something similar to a lot of the players from the draft class, the Cole Caulfields, Jack Hughes, those types of contracts, the longer term ones, the 7-8 year deals for around $7.5-8 million. Do you still think that's where he falls around?
Yeah, I do. I think ultimately, but like again, like I don't know what made me think of it. Oh, it was when I was doing the stupid roster exercise, and I was looking at Tampa Bay's, you know, cap, and I was looking at Braden Point making 9.5, and he made 5.9 for like 3 years, and like, I really, really wonder, and, you know, I really wonder if that's not something to think about, you know, because that was very much a decision that was made, I believe, with him still there. You know, that extension he signed when Verbeek and Yzerman were still in Tampa Bay. And so it's just something I'm really curious about. You know, I could see if, you know, like if you told me him and Troy Terry signed matching cap hits but different lengths,
yep,
that wouldn't necessarily surprise me. You know, like if he signed a 3x6.5 and Terry signed a 6x6.5, like I wouldn't have an issue with that. You know what I mean? I think you can make a very strong argument for both of them kind of having that kind of dual cap hit matched the fact that they've been the big play drivers for this team and what they've meant to this team and what they're being going to be asked to do for this team. But, you know, I wonder, like we've said it before, and I'm fine with it again. Like, I would sign him to an 8x8 million. I still think he's absolutely a player who's going to be worth that in the long run. I think the creativity and the passion and the offensive upside is just so significant. I really do think he's going to be a 70-plus point player in this league for a long time.
Yeah.
So I would not mind signing him to a long-term deal like that, especially, you know, just because if things get weird over the next couple of years, it's always nice to be able to have him and just be like, no, you're here, man.
Yeah.
But, you know, I wonder about him and what he's looking for and if he wouldn't maybe want to sign a 2 or a 3 year deal and try to maximize on the cap going up in a couple of years and all that kind of stuff. You know, the question there is, how does that work with McTavish? How does that work with Carlson? Like, how does he see himself fitting in? Like, you know, with this expectation that Leo Carlson is going to be a number one center that can play both ways, like, does he still want to be, like, what is more important to him, being a number one center or being the best offensive player on his team? Mm-hmm. And I don't know how to answer that for him, obviously, but, like, I really wouldn't have a problem with him being an $8 million first line left wing. Like, I just think he's worth it. I think he's such a phenomenal player, and his ability to affect the game in the offensive end is just so special. Like, you know, but I don't know if he wants that, right? Maybe he does want to stay down the center and he does think that's what's best for him. And, like, obviously that's where the coach and the GM got to talk to him and that kind of stuff. But, like, you know, he doesn't strike me as selfish. He doesn't strike me as, like, particularly egotistical in a negative way or anything like that, right? He seems, all things considered, pretty level-headed, pretty well-adjusted, and, like, he just wants to do crazy shit and play hockey and win hockey games.
Yeah.
You know, so, again, like, I would sign him to an 8x8. I think if I could, I would drop that somewhere into the sevens. But... you know, again, I wouldn't necessarily scoff at them signing him to 8x8. I would certainly be fine and understand what the rationale behind that deal was.
Yeah, I think one of the issues with a lot of these younger players signing their first contracts now is we're in this era of almost paying guys for potential now. Listen,
which is good.
It is, but we don't know the outcome of that yet, right? There's only so many guys that hit their potential, so... they look like they're going to be worth it. Well, the one for me that always sticks out is, like, listen, I think Cole Caulfield's a great player, but the numbers don't back up giving him right now 7x7.85 is what he ended up getting.
Mm-hmm.
Right? He had a 23-goal, 43-point season in 67 games in his rookie season. That's really good. Not bad at all. Then last year, in 46 games, he had 26 goals, which is amazing, and 36 points. It's not bad at all. But he's played 123 games. And he's got 53 goals and 84 points, and you've given him 7 years at $7.85 million. Like, that's, we're just in the era of paying guys on potential, right? So we'll know in 4 or 5 years if that's a little bit too much, or if that's a bargain, mm-hmm. or if that's just about right. You've got Jack Hughes, on the other hand, who paid for potential but also produced at that level and probably above the level he's getting paid for, right? But then they all use each other as comparables. You mentioned Dylan Cousins, and those are then, because of where they're drafted and have the age and their production and whatever, they just get kind of compared across the same line, and they end up getting those same deals. For Zegras, and more so than Caulfield, I do think even right now, and then you add the potential into the mix, I do think he's worth $7.5 million, up to $8 million. If he did, even if he continues to produce at the same level he is now, if he stays a 60 to 70 point player and does everything that he does now, I think he's worth the money, with the potential that he becomes a 80 to 90 point player, and then, you know, you've got value for money there. Essentially, is that you're mm-hmm. only paying him $7 or $8 million, but he's worth, when the cap goes up, a 9 to 10, $11 million player, right? So there's a risk inherently with all of that. We're just in the era of, listen, every time these guys get out of their ELC now, if they're a top prospect, we're locking them down for 7 or 8 years, and that's it. So I don't see it being anything less. I can't imagine he signs something like a 2 or 3 or 4 year deal. I do think it eventually becomes the same thing as what we've seen a lot of the young players sign lately, which is a 7 or 8 year deal. I think it just comes down to term, and I think that's the, if you want to call it a sticking point at this point, that's the maybe the area where there's more of a gap, is maybe the team's trying to get him closer to 7 and he's trying to get closer to 8, and it's just finding a number, I think, that's inevitably going to fall somewhere in between that.
The cap hit?
Yeah.
Yeah. How do you feel about the Matt Boldy contract, the 7x7 he signed? Are you more confident in his 7x7 than you are in 7x8 that Caulfield signed?
Yeah, I mean, he's fairly similar as well to Caulfield in that sense. I'm a bit more confident in his projection as a player in his game than I am Cole Caulfield. Again, you know, a little bit more.
He's a little bit bigger. He's a stronger two-way player for sure. I don't.
Yeah, he's played further down in the lineup at times too. He's still a guy who wasn't even given a lot of power play time in Minnesota. Probably one time. Was playing third line at times. Didn't play with the top line like Kaprizov only a few times. Last year, 30 goals, 63 points. The season before that, 15 goals, 39 points in 47 games. Just a little bit more production and then consistency based on where he's put in the lineup. But again, it's apples and oranges. You could like Cole Caulfield as a player better. I just think projection-wise, potential-wise, I'm a bit more comfortable with the Matt Boldy deal. But again, he definitely also got paid based off potential too, because you're not normally giving a player who's had one 60-point season a longer-term contract like that unless you're banking on that they can continue to do this year after year after year, and then that's going to be a valuable, a lot better contract for you as the cap goes up. So as it is with any deal for these young players, it's gambling in a sense that they're going to either continue to produce or at the very least stay at the same level that they're at now. But I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong with my observation of this. It just feels like it's more often now that you're getting these guys signed after 1.5 seasons, 100, 120 games, these younger players at the outset of their ELC, and getting paid for the potential of what they could be based on not so much on what they've already produced.
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy, because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post, so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWireSports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWireSports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWireSports, and support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWireSports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, and it's interesting to me. Like, I think we've talked about this, and like, this is something I've been thinking about for a long time, because the way that you see contracts work in other sports, and the way that the NHL views your prime and stuff like that, and like when your actual like production prime is, and like, again, like, there's a really interesting conversation I think to be had about, is your prime defined by your production, or is your prime defined by your play, that kind of stuff. I still think, and this might not be fair, and I don't know if people agree with this or not, but like, I think I would still rather gamble on the Cole Caulfield deal than signing the John Tavares deal in Toronto.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Because I don't like paying a guy for what he did, paying a guy a lot of money for what he did. I'd rather risk paying a guy a lot of money for what I think he can do. And that's a definitive gamble, but I think the upside is higher. I think when you sign a John Tavares like deal, you are hoping he's worth it.
Yep.
When you sign Tage Thompson, even Dylan Cousins, Cole Caulfield, right, you're hoping this guy's going to be worth more than this.
Yeah.
Right? Because, again, there is a very real possibility that Cole Caulfield is Alex DeBrincat level elite goal scoring player in the Rocket race every year, right? Top 10 in, like, they are expecting Cole Caulfield to be in the top 10 in goals every year. That's why they gave him that contract.
Yeah, for sure.
And I think that's a very good gamble. You know, like you said, he put up, what was it, like 36 goals in like 50 games or something like that last year, something ridiculous. Like, he's got all the talent in the world. The question is going to be about, is he able to stay healthy and stuff like that, which is, again, why the concerns with his size were there when he was drafted. And it's going to be very interesting to see, but I think, you know, how many years has John Tavares actually been worth his $11 million of that deal? Two?
Maybe, yeah.
You know what I mean? And he hasn't been bad. I don't want to say that he's been bad, but, like, I don't think he's been an $11 million player. I think he's been an $8.5, $9 million player.
Yeah, and how much like, could the Leafs use that extra $2.5, $3 million in cap space, right?
Right. Yeah, especially over, you know, Nylander's coming up, and Matthews is coming up, like, you know, and then you've got the Morgan Rielly deal that they signed and all this other stuff, and now there's, like, the Matt Murray stuff, and then they might have to buy out TJ Brody and, like, all this other shit, like, $2.5 million, like, that's the difference. Like, maybe that allows them to keep Rasmus Sandin, and maybe they're not looking for, you know, a depth defenseman like that or something like that, right? Like, you know, that's why you're having to go out and sign Mark Giordano to a sub-$1 million contract, is because you're just like, we need somebody who we can trust to play and whatever. But, like, I just think it removes more options than it opens up by, and it creates more questions than it answers by giving these guys that kind of money. And I don't, you know, there has to be a world where he makes, again, like, if he makes $9 million, it's a completely different situation for them.
Yeah.
So it's a very weird and interesting thing. And again, I will say it for forever, it comes back to the hard cap, and I am never going to begrudge a player taking these teams for all the money that they can. Sign the biggest contracts you can, get as much guaranteed money as you can, like 100%. And, you know, go for it. Like, I'm not mad at the players for signing these deals. I just think the problem is it really hurts guys farther down the lineup, and it hurts these teams' ability to remain competitive over an extended period of time when they have to start moving guys out because they can't afford to keep everybody. So, you know, I just think, you know, again, I guess my point here is just kind of like, you're right that we are seeing teams pay more for potential and take that gamble, but I also think that's the right way to approach it.
Yeah, no, that's fair. I can see that. Like, again, the only other option you have is signing them to a bridge deal, something similar to Braden Point. But again, if you're a team, you fall in the trap of, well, if they end up being worth more, you end up paying them that difference. You save right. At a different time. You save
right in
the short run rather than in the long run. So.
Right, and the reason, the other thing to say, and I'm sure people have been yelling at me about this, like, while they're listening, but, like, the other thing to say is the reason you can sign Braden Point to the bridge deal and know you can do it on the other end is because you have guys ahead of him in the lineup already. You have Kucherov, yeah. You have Hedman, you have Vasilevsky, you have Stamkos. Like, you've got guys in the lineup already filling out those top positions on those big contracts that are making money.
Yeah.
You know.
Most of these teams that we've talked about don't. So, Buffalo, right. Anaheim definitively, Montreal,
right.
New Jersey, they didn't really have anybody making, or a lot of people making significant money in front of them that were better than them. Like, you look at Jack Hughes, he was the best player offensively on that team last year. He's going to get paid. Even so, New Jersey still got a pretty good deal on what they eventually signed him for, the same Caulfield. Again, nobody really above him getting paid. Nobody really above Cousins getting paid or Tage Thompson getting paid, right? So it's different scenarios then, for sure.
Right. So, yeah, for sure.
All right, well, before we wrap, what are your predictions on what do you think these three guys sign at? What are your – we'll go back and we'll touch base on them after they sign. But what do you think Terry signs for? What do you think Zegras signs for? And what do you think Drysdale signs
for? I will stick with 6x6.5 for Troy Terry. Okay. I like that contract. I think that works. And if they sign that, I would be a very happy boy. Mm-hmm. Because I think, I guess for me, if you're Pat Verbeek, I think you can make a legitimate offer that he should make about $6 million. And if you're Troy Terry, you're saying, I think I'm about an $8 million player.
Right.
And so I think 6 by 6.5 makes a lot of sense. For Zegras, I will say 5 by 7.
Okay.
And for Drysdale, I will say 2 by 2. I think those are my predictions.
All right. I think for Terry, I'm going both 7-year deals for Terry and Zegras. They'll do the 8 for Zegras. I think Zegras gets an 8 by 8. I think that's what
8 by 8 for Zegras.
That's what you're eventually like.
8 by 8 TZ.
Terry, I'm going 6.75 by 7. And Drysdale, I'm going to go 2.75 by 2.
2.75 by 2. Okay. And then I said 5 by 7, yep, for Zegras, 6 by 6.5. I just want to write these down so we have them, so that when we're both wrong, we know
exactly. How bad. I was going to say.
And then 2 by 2. Okay. All right, man. Well, this is a reasonably short episode, all things considered.
Yeah, we didn't keep you guys for that long. We just wanted to get back on more so for us personally to jump back on and talk hockey again. Don't want to keep you guys waiting too long. And hopefully we'll be back again sooner rather than later, because we're going to have more news about Troy Terry coming out this week. Inevitably, again, Zegras and Drysdale will be signed hopefully by the end of August. So we're going to have that stuff to cover, and then
season prediction, season preview stuff.
Season preview. There could still be a few more signings. There's still some guys. My boy Tatar is still out there, still unsigned.
He is still out there.
So, there could be.
Do you think he signs a Tarasenko type deal, or do you think he's going to end up closer to around $4 million?
I don't think he signs the 5, but I think he is somewhere between 4 and 5. I just don't know if he's. I doubt he gets term at this point. I think it's,
oh yeah, it's, no. He's probably a guy who's going to sign 1 and 2 year deals for a while.
Yeah,
he would be a good one for Chicago.
There's a lot of teams that he'd be a very good fit for right now, and I think from what I've read, he's got a lot of different options on the table. And from what I've seen on his Instagram, it must be his agent handling most of it, because he's enjoying his summer to the fullest. So we'll see. I still hope he's in Anaheim by the end of the year. But regardless, we'll have a lot more stuff to cover on the next show, and we do still have some fun episodes planned throughout the summer. We've both been a little busy throughout the month of July, so hopefully we can get a few more out in August here and get ramped up for the start of the season.
Absolutely.
All right. Any parting words?
Don't get heat stroke. Heat stroke is bad. Don't do that. Eddie, I don't know. You don't know what that is, but like sometimes it gets really hot in other places. And so like in the middle of July, the idea that you're wearing a crew neck and a beanie is killing me, because like I'm very jealous of that fact. But I will be in a shorts when you're in 7 layers of clothing, so I'll deal with it.
Yeah, it's not quite as hot here. We're I don't know what the conversion is, but it's not.
What is it, like 7 degrees or whatever the
just
shit?
23. It's been 28 Celsius, so I don't know what that is. I think it's like 80s or 90s, I think. So.
Probably, yeah.
So it's warmish, but not super hot. Just humid, which is gross. So
no.
I've been sitting in the AC, which is why I have a crew neck on. So.
Ooh, there we go. Yeah. Love that. So, all right, everybody, enjoy the rest of your summer, and hopefully we'll have more stuff soon, guys.
See you guys.
Bye.
For years, Minky Couture has been donating blankets to NICUs across the country. Owner Sandy Henry's grandson was born at 30 weeks, and she placed a mini blanket in her grandson's incubator. We want to help other NICU families with the Heart of Minky program. For every adult-sized blanket purchased, Minky Couture will donate a mini-sized blanket to NICUs across the nation. Thanks to you, we can fulfill our dream to blanket the world.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.